Do you write these down, man?
No.
Yeah, he had a fucking yeah. Dido library ready for in case this reference
came. It wouldn't surprise me. Have you seen the guy make lists?
Welcome to episode 38 of There Is No Offseason, a podcast from Baseball Prospectus focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley, and I am joined by BP's fantasy manager and the man who finally learned to let Edwin Jackson go, Brett Sayer, and my fellow authors, infographic czar Mauricio Rubio, and my future temporary roommate, Craig Goldstein. Good evening, guys. Say hi to everyone and tell them where they can find you on the interwebs. And Brett, we will start with you.
You can find me at baseballprospectus.com and thedynastyguru.com and on Twitter at dynastyguru. Mal?
You can find me at baseballprospectus.com where I do not read Brett Sayer. You can also find me on Twitter at mrubio52. Craig?
You can find me at Baseball Prospectus, at the Dynasty Guru, and at SB Nation's MLB News Desk, and you can find me on Twitter at CD, that's CD as in carpet and douchebagger, Goldstein. Ben?
That was a rough intro all the way around.
Yeah, it's a bad start. It's going to go well.
No, we're gonna ride it through.
Perfect.
All right, excellent, I believe that's what I say now. Excellent. You can also find me at Baseball Prospectus and at the Dynasty Guru, and you can find me on Twitter at Ben Carsley. You can find this podcast on Twitter via the aptly named at Tino Podcast handle, and you can ask us questions and talk to us about your feelings by emailing us at tinopodcast@gmail.com. So this week we are going to continue onward with our positional series, assuming any one of us can get through an entire sentence unmolested, and we're going to dive into the sad, sad world of Dynasty League first baseman. Once we're done apologizing for Eric Hosmer, we're going to talk about some current events, and we might touch on the topic of me visiting Craig in a few weeks, too. But first, we're going to do something unprecedented on Tino to this point, and we're going to start with reader emails. And our first reader email of the week is from friend of the podcast, Rotolando. Rotolando says, "Dear Tino, apparently my jerk-ass league mates don't think Jesus Aguilar is the top shelf trade ship that he is. That's fine. I'll keep him and rack up fantasy gold like Mr. T. After that slap in the face, I'm looking to unload a bomb on them. I've got a few prospects who are getting a lot of interest because they have rankings hype or they're getting close to the majors. Which one of these guys can I trade away at a high price but has a high chance of blowing up right in their stupid faces? Tyler Glasnow, Clint Frazier, Julio Urias, Daniel Norris, Carlos Carrasco. Thanks, Rotolando. P.S. What's up with all the background noises in the last episode? At various times, I thought Brett was feeding goldfish. Mao dropped an armful of cardboard wrapping paper tubes, and Craig furiously put out a fire on his shirt. Rotolando." Not sarcastically, I now get that reference. I hadn't read this email through until right now, so now I understand the reference we were speaking about pre-podcast. But, Craig, we will kick this out to you first. Answer Rotolando's question.
Well, first, I wish there was a fire on my shirt during the intro. It would have gone a little smoother, but regretfully not. Out of these names, I mean, I think these are all pretty quality names. I would say Glasnow has the best chance of backfiring or backsliding. He's still a really good prospect. I still like him a lot, but he has huge bouts of control issues. And, you know, while you can throw 100 and that's great, you have to throw it around the plate in some respect. So I think of the names listed, he's got the best chance of backfiring on someone if you trade him away. And I think you can trade him. I don't know if his stock is going to be higher than it is, you know, kind of currently. Ben, do you disagree?
No, I don't disagree. I think Frazier might have the lowest floor of anyone on this list, but his value is not as high right now as Glasnow's is, as you said. So if you're looking for, you know, sort of the duality there, who can you sell at their peak right now, who could also implode, I think it's Glasnow, even though I think his floor is still a little higher than Frazier. Brett, are you still going to speak to me after that analysis?
Yeah, it's Glasnow. It's relatively easy, unless you really don't believe in Carlos Carrasco, in which case now might not be the worst time to get out from underneath him because of his value. But I wouldn't be rushing to do that unless you get something overwhelming. Mal?
No, it's Glasnow. But number two is, you think it's between Clint Frazier and Carlos Carrasco, Brett?
No, not Frazier. Frazier has plenty of risk, but Frazier doesn't have the value right now to qualify. I mean, I would put I might put Frazier last, honestly.
I actually agree.
Just because I don't think you're going to get, I mean, he's looking to trade someone away at a high price. I mean, Frazier is going to bring back the least return of all the guys on this list, even though I don't. These are good names. He's going to bring back the least return of all these guys, and I wouldn't trade him while that's the case. There's a pretty good chance that he will go out and be awesome in the minors next year, and that may not change the fact that he has a lot of risk. So there's plenty of time in Frazier's development cycle to sell high on him if you want to. I just won't be one of the people doing it.
I couldn't agree more. I was going to say, if I list these out, I would say, in order, I would go Glasnow, Carrasco, Norris, Urias, and Frazier. And obviously, I'm someone who's spoken out against Frazier a decent amount on this podcast. But not only do I agree with what Brett said, I also think that he's kind of, I don't think he's going to blow up on anyone, like in a bad way. I don't know that I buy into his ceiling as much as other people do. But I still think he's going to be marginally productive. The other four are pitchers and could easily blow up. I mean, we've seen Carrasco have control issues. We've seen Glasnow have control issues. Urias, as much as I like him and as much as there's some safety in like how young he is versus like how good he is already, and there's a lot of concern about that. And Norris might be at his peak value too, right on the cusp of the major leagues, without having, I mean, he had a rough September, but without having truly failed. So that's the order I'd put it in.
I agree with just about everything you said, but I'm not giving up Urias. I'd rather trade Frazier when he's not at his peak value, then give up your Urias.
Me too. But if we're talking about strictly like chances of blowing up in his enemy's stupid faces, right, that's probably the order I'd go. I wouldn't trade Urias before Frazier. But yeah.
I'm just saying, so for me, that's where the scale tips the level, whereas I wouldn't even consider it. That's all I'm saying.
Gotcha. I think that's...
All right, yeah, fair. I mean... I think that just about sums that up. So thank you for Rotolando. I know this was a banner week for him, really, because Jesus Aguilar was mentioned in a not totally disparaging way several times on Baseball Prospectus this week. So
and Dynasty Guru.
And Dynasty Guru, that is.
Thank you.
It's an excellent.
Yeah, it's been a strong Rotolando week.
And that's really all anyone can ask for, right?
True.
All right. We will move on to our next question of the week, which is from Kurt. Kurt says, "Hello again, guys. I've been trying to sort out a glut of relief pitching in my 12-team Roto squad. I ended last season with four closers on my roster in Perkins, Street, Doolittle, and Britton, plus Wade Davis and Ken Giles. I feel like, given my current position, I should probably try to bank as large a lead as possible in saves early in the season, see how injuries and roles shake out, and then deal a pitcher or two midseason. But does anybody disagree? Which of these players would it be wisest to deal before the season starts? Thanks again, Kurt." So on the one hand, this is a question about relief pitchers. So, you know, we tend to avoid this topic like the plague because A, who knows, and B, dear God, please don't make us talk about relief pitchers. But as relief pitchers go, I thought this email mentioned some interesting names. So Mao, we'll kick this out to you first. Would you be keeping all four of the closers? Do you prefer Davis or Giles to any of the closers? Who would you be trying to trade? Attack this from any angle that you please.
I'd be trying to deal a couple of closers, especially considering this is a dynasty league, and Brett's really adamant about trading all of your saves in dynasty leagues, and I agree with that strategy. In terms of value versus return and what you're trying to do with giving up a closer, I think Houston Street's probably your number one guy to try to trade away. He's someone who's had an injury history, who has a pretty long and extensive injury history, and I mean, while he's good when he does pitch, like, there's always that fear that he's just going to go down and completely weigh down your team. That said, he had a tremendous year last year. There's not a tremendous amount of competition for him in LA. I mean, I know Joe Smith's there, but the Street's a better pitcher there. And I think that's a guy who could probably give you a pretty, for a reliever who can give you a pretty solid return. I think Doolittle's up there as well, especially with Tyler Clipper there now. Clipper's thrown a lot of pitches, and he's not really necessarily a sure thing to stay healthy, even though he's defied that throughout his career. But I do think that Clipper can probably give him a little bit of competition out there as well. I like Giles quite a bit. I think between him and Davis, I would prefer him, and I would try to see if It's tough, but I might consider seeing what you can do with a couple of these guys and jettisoning them out and adding Giles in. I don't know if I could confidently advocate for Giles over somebody who's got a closer's job. So even though I'm not the biggest Perkins fan, and I still don't believe in Britton, even though he was absolutely balls out crazy last year. I can't really say Giles over Britton or over Perkins, just considering the construct of your league. But I would definitely explore a trade possibility here and see what you can get back. And I think Street's probably going to bring back the best. Brett, you agree? Disagree?
Zach Britton is a saint.
I concur.
A lot of this is dependent on how competitive he is. I mean, and how many of these guys he can keep. I mean, if it's a matter of keeping these relievers over guys who can be contributors at other positions, then I think consolidating in the offseason by at least one name is probably a good idea. If he can keep all of these guys without really much consequence, and he's looking to compete, I would be keeping all of them, especially if it's a daily transaction league, because having the closers and then having those two, big strikeout, great ratio guys in Davis and Giles really, really helps. It helps ease the need for starting pitching slightly. If I am going to trade one, I think I agree with Mao. I think it would be Houston Street, just because I think you'd get the most for him. Perkins is constantly underrated, and he just keeps getting the job done. Britton, I absolutely believe in. He's quite good. And Doolittle is, I think, pretty safe even with Clippard in Oakland, but. I would be leaning towards keeping all of them and then kind of see how the roles shake out. But if I were to trade any of them, it would probably be Wade Davis, just because I think you could get the most for him, and you're not giving up saves, and you have Giles right there as a fill-in high-end non-closer reliever. Craig?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to make the same point you were about, kind of, if he can keep all these guys without it affecting much else, I would do that. I think banking a huge lead and then trading off closers to kind of different teams that can't catch you or whatever is a great strategy in this situation. And when it comes time to trade them, be it this offseason or in season, I would say trade whoever brings back the most or whatever, whoever brings back what you need. I don't make a huge deal about distinguishing between closers, especially when they're all kind of in the same tier as they are in this case. I mean, you're not talking about Kimbrel or Jansen or Chapman or any of those guys, or even the bottom tier of closers. You're talking about kind of mid to high end relievers right now, and I would trade literally anyone who gets me the piece that I want. I wouldn't distinguish between them in that sense. Ben?
Definitely a good point. I think I'm going to leave it as I agree with literally everything Brett said, other than I disagree with the assertion that you'll get the most for Houston Street out of any of these guys. I just think you'll get the best return for what you're giving up in terms of Street is the most. Street's the guy I'd sacrifice first. I think a savvy fantasy player would be more interested in Perkins or Britton than Street. I think they would return more, but you're also giving up more. I love Houston Street, but like Mao alluded to, he's always hurt. So for me, it's just that Street, you protect yourself the most by giving away Street because you're still going to get something back. That's the only differentiation I'd make.
So I would have thought that Doolittle would bring back the most.
More than Perkins, really?
Yeah. People freaking love Sean Doolittle.
Yeah, that people, crazy story. People really, yeah, on the other end, people really underrate Perkins.
Agreed.
Perkins is one of those guys that is just, he's just so solid and nobody really seems to care, which is totally fine with me, which is why I own him in like literally half the leagues that I'm in.
So you own him in like 28 leagues, 29?
Yeah, probably like 29 leagues, yeah.
Yeah, Brett, we've been meaning to talk to you, Brett. You have a problem.
This is the support group, right?
Nah, not a lot of support here.
No. It's a shaming group, really.
It's worth a shot.
All right, let's stop talking about relievers and start talking about first baseman, because when will we get an opportunity to do that, if not right now? And this question is from Pete from Tucson. And Pete says, friends and Craig, first-time caller, long-time listener, I can't trust Miggy, not in the personal sense, cool, but from a health standpoint. Cabrera turns 32 in April and is currently tending to some pretty serious injuries. With my inaugural Dynasty draft upcoming, I'm worried that he'll fall to me with the 7th overall pick. How do you guys think his injuries will impact his performance in the upcoming season? And more generally, how well do you see him aging over the next 5 or so years? Should I walk away from the ledge and be happy if he falls to me at 7 overall? Thanks, as always, for your words of wisdom, Pete. Brett, to me, this seems like a fairly alarmist Miggy tweet, not tweet, email. But you have spent more time on first base rankings than I have. So why don't you take it away here? How do you feel about Miggy?
I think that if I had the 7th pick in a startup dynasty league and Miggy was available, I would easily jump into his arms like Robin Wright at the end of The Princess Bride jumps into Andre the Giant's arms.
An amazing visual.
Yes. Yeah, if you get him at 7, that's fantastic. I get the concern for 2015 leagues just because, you know, there's always a chance he might miss time. But even for this year, he's still going to be a no doubt first rounder. Someone's going to take him. I think he's easy top 5 overall, and I'm not concerned long term. I think he's a hitter that's going to age extremely well. He's such a great natural hitter, and he is a great natural hitter with power. And those guys are the guys that you want to invest in. So, really not much more to it than that. Don't worry about the ledge. Just enjoy him. And unfortunately, he's probably not going to make it to you at 7, though. So I probably wouldn't even worry about it. Mao.
Yeah, no, it's. I don't know if you can trust him personally either, though. I mean, there's a DUI back there. There's some issues with Miggy from a personal standpoint.
Jesus.
But no, there's a. That's pretty much it. I mean, I think this is overreacting to you know, some serious health concerns, but you know, I think he's still going to provide you some average, and even if his power takes a backslide, it's you know, you're still talking about potentially a 300 hitter who can give you 20 home runs, 20 to 25 home runs, even, you know, if we're envisioning a scenario where his power takes like a serious, serious backdive. So, I mean, I don't think he's going to get to you at 7 either. If he's in there at 7, yeah, I you take that. I think you do that. Craig?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's, like as Ben said, this is a pretty alarmist response. He's been, you know, he was injured last year during the year, still played 159 games, hit 313, 371, 524, which is pretty fantastic. And, you know, he hit 52 doubles. I understand the home runs were down substantially, but the doubles were up big time. And I think, you know, I don't think the injury or recovering from surgery is going to hinder him any more than the injury itself did. I think you can at least count on kind of what last year was. And in terms of the next 5 years, yeah, you know, holding a declining Miguel Cabrera, but there are worse things in life than that. So, Ben?
Yeah, I don't, like, thank you very much for writing in, but you have no chill.
That sums it up pretty perfectly, actually.
Thank you. I mean, he's good. Why are you so worried? He's good. He's very good. It'll be okay.
Who are you really, I mean, think about it. At 7, who are you really going to take over him? Are you going to take, you know, maybe Carlos Gomez?
Mm. Well, I'm taking Miggy.
Mm-hmm. In whatever draft people were talking about online today, someone took Rizzo before.
Oh, I saw that. Somebody did take Rizzo before Miguel Cabrera, and that's not right. Don't do that.
Yeah, someone also took Jose Abreu before Paul Goldschmidt, and that ain't right either.
Yeah, don't do that. Stop doing that.
I would take Miggy, IMO.
Yeah. I mean, controversial, but yeah, you do that.
We were just all members of Big Miggy here to push his agenda. That's what it is.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, well, that solves that. Let's move on to our final email of the week, which is from Gordon. Gordon says, Tino Gang, two questions. One, upon reading much of friend of the podcast, Jeff Quinton's work about specific biases, I'd like to know from each of you, what kind of players are you biased toward? Do you account for these biases and overcorrect? Brett, it's obvious you like short, fat, punchless first basemen, but are there others? Two, which players did you miss on in 2014, and what can you learn from those misses in 2015? Always enjoy the show. Thanks for helping the winter go by. Jordan. So, interesting, multifaceted question here, but I think we should lead off perhaps with the type of players that you are biased toward. I will answer that question first. I will say that I think I have a bias against players who were not prospects like at all coming up, like the Jacob DeGroms of the world, guys who I haven't really heard of or paid a ton of attention to, even if I have heard of them. Because I spend so much time thinking about the minor leagues, I think I tend to automatically discount fairly anonymous guys who have success in the majors right away. And I think these guys are harder than any other type to sort of project future success for, but I'm making a conscious effort to pay more attention to them and not simply write them off because they weren't in one of my precious top 4,000 lists before they reached the majors. Brett, I'm interested to hear your response to certain biases you have other than pudgy, bad first baseman.
I was actually going to say one or two things. One is very similar to what Ben said. I mean, I think it's somewhat common across people who, you know, do a lot of watching and researching in minor leagues. So I, you know, that's a bias that I fight against as well. The other bias that I have outside of my love of short, fat first baseman, is I have become very much a bat speed whore, and occasionally I can let that blind some of my other better judgment, but the best thing you can do is be aware of it and adjust accordingly. Mao.
I really like top-end starting pitchers like the Clayton Kershaws and, you know, just really those ace-level types. So before, I used to really draft those guys pretty aggressively. Like, I'd be the guy drafting Kershaw at, like, 3 this year. That's what I would do. I do overcorrect for it now. I've kind of taken the bent approach to acquiring as many SP3s as I can and, you know, letting the law of averages kind of see where I can go and how I can do this a little bit better. You know, in terms of, are we addressing the second question yet?
Sure. World is your oyster.
The dude I missed on hardest was definitely Jose Abreu. And the definite lesson that I learned out of that is stop hating on Cuba. Just stop hating on it. I did too much of a discount for the Cuban guy, and I shouldn't have done that. That was not smart on my part.
He wasn't that bad last year.
No, he was okay. He was okay.
All right, Craig, tell us about Ketchikatal, a bias you have.
I think my bias is fairly well documented towards, especially in fantasy, towards catcher. I overrate them in a big way. And aside from that, from a scouting difference, I think I gravitate towards short pitchers who throw hard. So guys in the Carlos Martinez, Yordano Ventura, mold, guys like that. Marcus Stroman is another one. So, you know, I don't know. Those are the type of guys I like. Those are obviously fairly successful versions of that. I'm probably going to be hung out to dry with a guy like Brandon Finnegan, who hopefully they are going to leave as a starter, but it's possible he ends up as a reliever. And if that's the case, I'm going to be overrating him all the way down. In terms of guys I missed on, I mean, I'll agree with Mao. I was not expecting this type of production from Jose Abreu at all. But I also don't know that I would entirely change that. I'm not going to say that that was like bad. I mean, it was a bad miss, no doubt, but I don't think you just be like, oh, everyone from Cuba is going to be fantastic. So I don't know. I'd have to think about someone. I mean, I've turned around on some guys. Kenny Vargas, I'm completely in the tank for at this point, who I referred to as the Minnesotan Jesus Aguilar at some point during the year. So that's something that I'm going to have to address. But I'll agree with Ben, like guys who weren't on my radar early on, I just I don't know. I take a longer time to come around on, and guys that seem like quad A guys, like that's what Vargas seemed like to me without having seen him too much. And I don't know. So that's the kind of guys who are who hit all the way up, but don't have the hype that comes with it. Those are guys that I need to start adjusting on a little faster.
Well, I'll jump in and answer the second question. Study answer before the guy who I miss most on is Yan Gomes. I mean, we talked about him at the beginning of the season, and I wasn't buying it. And you know, that does tie back to the, you know, the sort of weakness that I think we are all sharing in. But I mean, he's clearly a very good fantasy catcher, and that was not what I was expecting. So we'll see how well I learn from that going forward.
Yeah, he's a miss for me too. Corey Kluber, basically everyone on the Indians. I don't know.
Kipnis was a miss too. Yeah.
Kluber was bad because I feel like we all rallied against the pro Kluber movement, and then we just got like real quiet by June.
Yeah.
I'm still like I'm kind of like not buying into Brantley, so I don't know if I'm just doomed to repeat myself or whatever. But
I'm with you on that.
So I don't know. We'll see. Maybe I should just stop doubting. I won't doubt Cleveland Indian pitchers anymore because Mickey Callaway is a genius. But I kind of doubt that last year was the real Brantley.
Yeah. All that means is that Gavin Floyd is going to win the Cy Young this year.
Don't say
that. Yeah. I'm super on Gavin Floyd. Yeah.
That hurts me. Don't do that.
I missed on Bogarts and learned nothing.
Same.
Yeah. I still think he's going to be phenomenal, and I will go down with that ship. Not going to.
That's not. Don't we're not this. A Dido podcast.
Yeah.
We.
That's aggressive.
We have right. a different patron saint.
You do. Do you think Enya missed on Dido?
Welcome back to episode 38 of Tino. I hope you used the break to determine which Aztec god you'd like to use as your safe word for your future endeavors. And now we are going to continue on with our positional series, which we're doing on a weekly basis at Baseball Prospectus. And this week we have the misfortune of discussing fantasy first baseman. So throughout the positional series, our goal is essentially to cover every angle for every possible league anyone could play in. So we have rankings just for 2015. We have three-year rankings, rankings for AL-only and NL-only leagues, valuations for those of you who prefer auctions. We have lay of the land columns. We have get to know the prospect columns. Really anything you want on a positional basis, we are providing to you. But since Tino is a podcast from Baseball Prospectus focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats, we are going to talk about Brett Sayer's Dynasty League first baseman list. So, Brett, I have with me an item that will be able to start this metaphorical ride, and I shall pass that on to you for the time being.
Thank you, Ben. And let me clarify. Talking about first baseman in a Dynasty context is only a bummer if you talk about prospects, and since only six prospects made the entire top 50, the list is less of a bummer than you think. I mean, the prospects suck, but it's not indicative of the fun of the list. So we'll start from the top because that's what we always do when I'm afraid of change. The first two names on the list are Paul Goldschmidt and Miguel Cabrera. We know that Cabrera has some current injury issues. Goldschmidt missed the last 6-7 weeks of last season with a finger injury, and there's very mild concern that it will linger on to his power production early on in 2015. But before we move down the list to more, I want to say not interesting because they're both fantastically talented. But is there anyone who any of you would put in the top two other than Goldschmidt or Cabrera?
Definitely not Anthony Rizzo. Definitely not.
I'm going to assume that's a no from everybody then.
I liked Ben's answer.
What was Ben's answer?
Hosmer.
Oh, yeah, that's a good answer.
As long as I'm not taking Miguel Cabrera 7th overall exactly, I'd take him 6th, I'd take him 8th. But as long as I'm not taking him 7th overall, this is correct.
Perfect. So then that begs the following question. Does anybody have Cabrera over Goldschmidt?
No, I think stolen bases really. I mean, even if he's not stealing like 15 like he was before, I mean that's a huge separator at this high a level.
Sounds good. I agree with you. Goldschmidt is excellent. So that brings us to the next couple of names. Two of them in Chicago and one in Toronto. Abreu checks in at 3, Encarnacion at 4, and Anthony Rizzo at 5. There's obviously a very star powered tier behind them, but I guess we'll start with Abreu. Do we believe that Abreu is this good going forward? I do, but if you were going to make the argument against Abreu, what would it be? Now, since you hated him at the beginning of the season, we'll kick it out to you.
Well, I think a lot of the arguments that I had at the beginning of the season don't apply now. I think there were some, you know, unfounded batting speed concerns. I feel like I remember reading that he was labeled as kind of a mistake hitter down in Cuba, which, I mean, so it's you know, those don't apply. If you want to make the case against Jose Abreu for, you know, being this high, you go to track record and you go to what he did in the second half of last year when, you know, he experienced a little bit of a power outage, started hitting for more average. So, it all goes back to whether or not you think he's going to be able to make the adjustments. I personally do. I'm with you, Brett. But if you wanted to make the case against him, it's, you know, he doesn't have an extensive track record. He doesn't have a track record of, you know, making adjustments over the long term to what the pitchers are going to adjust against him. And he did taper off in power production last year, which I think is, you know, that's something that you need to have as a first baseman. So, I think that's the case. Ben, do you, different case? Any case?
Yeah,
no case?
Power is a great point, but he hit 350, 435, 513 over the second half. So, the lack of homers sucks, but he was out of his mind in everything else. So, I just like him. I don't have a lot. He's only going to be 28. I'm a fan.
Yeah, he essentially went from...
I'm with that.
Those stats in the second half are crazy to look at. It's hilarious. He was essentially George Brett.
and on top of that, I mean, you've got the White Sox got better around him.
It's a great point.
And he's in a phenomenal park for the foreseeable future. I mean, like, there's just, to me, there's not, unless you're just thinking, oh, it's a one-year sample, and that's not enough to go on, which I hear you to some extent, but even if he's, what, 5% worse, 7% worse, you're getting a phenomenal player whose contextual stats are should go up by all accounts. So,
yeah. I'm right with you.
That was a good straw man, Brett. Very good straw man.
Yeah. So let's talk about the other Chicago guy. Does Anthony Rizzo belong in this tier, Ben?
Yeah. No, I think he does. I've been a Rizzo believer for quite a while. I guess this seems like sort of an arbitrary statement, and I have not watched him as closely last year as I did throughout his minor league career. He seems like a guy who might be moderately high variance in just in terms of, I think he's going to be capable of a few borderline MVP years. And if he has years where he's really, really, really in the tank against lefties and he's, you know, more of a borderline top 10 guy than a top 5 guy, I think that's possible too. But add it all together with, again, favorable contextual factors and his age, and I think 5 is a very acceptable spot for him. Craig?
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. I think, you know, putting him ahead of Freddie Freeman's the right... I mean, his last year was so good, and he's shown signs of both those abilities prior to this, so it's easy to buy in on that set. In that sense, I do think that, you know, there's a chance he slides back to being a power hitter or being a hitter for average more than he was both last year. But even if that's the case, I mean, we've seen him, what he did last year is something we haven't really seen Freddie Freeman do, right? I mean, Freddie Freeman just hit 18 home runs over a full season. And he got, I mean, if you're going to involve contextual factors, his situation got markedly worse. So in terms of upside, I think he probably belongs in that tier versus the next group, which is a little more consistent, perhaps, but lower ceiling. Mal?
Yeah, moving up on the play-related wonders for Anthony Rizzo's, you know, both his production and his stock. It's It was an adjustment that he started making at the beginning of this year to cut off the inner half. It led to a career high in like hit by pitches, and it really helped him, you know, mitigate that hole that he has, you know, down and in, you know, especially against left-handers. So, you know, I don't necessarily buy the 280 average, but I mean, even if you think of him as like a 260 guy who can hit you 35 home runs, yeah, that's in this tier. That's with these guys. That's productive. And it's contextual stats are going to get better. Yeah, I agree.
All right. So yeah,
Ahead, real quick to the point about the average. I mean, the 2 years he's hit in the 280s, he's had a BABIP right around 310, but he's a career 283 guy. So I mean, it's hard to know if he's just going to have huge swings in BABIP like he's had thus far, or I mean, if he settles in as a 280, 290 BABIP guy, you're probably looking at a 265 to 270 hitter, which is fine. And with his power, it's especially fine. But it's just worth noting that about average. So I thought that was a good point for Matt.
That makes sense. So that brings us to the next tier, which is filled with enormous names. Names that were right at the top of the list, not in the too distant past. We'll kind of go around the other way. Craig, when you look at this tier, who is who's the guy that you think has the best chance of moving up easily into the top five next year with their performance?
This is a little bit of a cop out, but it's tied to me between Votto and Fielder. If Votto can show he's healthy, he belongs in that upper tier. I mean, he, based on his past performance, his batting average is a separator for the most part. I understand he's not a traditional power hitter, but he's been in the mid 20s before. I mean, he's easily a top five guy if he's right, in my mind. At the same time, I mean, Prince Fielder, you know, if he's healthy, he provides potentially the power on a level unlike anyone kind of above him, aside from, I guess, a healthy Miguel Cabrera. But Votto, to me, I mean, he had a leg injury, and that's going to affect his running, which is obviously a concern in fantasy, and part of where he made up some value when for not hitting for power. But I think, you know, if he magically was healthy and was running again and could hit again, that's the name that could shoot the furthest up the list to me.
If we're going in reverse order, I guess I'm next. So I think for me, I'm kind of in line with Craig on Votto. But the second name, I'm going to go in a slightly different direction. I'm going to go with Albert Pujols, who's, you know, he's had an up-and-down career in Los Angeles. You know, if he continues his upward trend that he's been on, and he continues to play 150 or 140 games, and you know, some of those doubles translate into a little bit. Well, that's dumb to say, but if he holds the home run gains that he made, if he keeps up his average around the 270 to 280 mark, and he's around 30 home runs, I think you can make a pretty decent case that he belongs up there in, you know, the top five tier, because that's pretty hard to find. Ben.
It's a good point on Pujols, but to me, if you're asking about someone who's going to be in the top five in a dynasty, it's not going to be Gonzalez or Pujols. It's going to be one of the other three. So it just depends on what you're looking for. Yes, obviously, if Votto is healthy, he is probably the most consistent of the group. If Fielder is healthy, I think he has the biggest upside. And if Freeman is healthy, I mean, he's the youngest and will have, I guess, just as much consistency as Votto, honestly. So if Encarnacion is hurt, or if Rizzo has one of those down years, I could easily see Freeman leapfrogging to five. If Fielder gets healthy and you want to put him behind Abreu, that makes sense to me. If Votto's healthy, you want to put him behind Abreu, that makes sense to me. So I think any of those three are capable of jumping up. I think Agon and Pujols are the only guys who, in a dynasty format, aren't going to be top five worthy.
Makes sense. I mean, I love Joey Votto. I think he is someone who certainly can jump up. But if I had to pick one guy, it's Prince Fielder. And Fielder is, you know, Fielder has the most upside of anyone in this group. And I think it's an interesting time to poke around and try to buy Fielder. I actually traded for him in TDGX earlier this month. Obviously I hope that works out. I mean, if his neck injury lingers, that is going to kind of suck for me. But I like his chances of bouncing back to at least the sort of 90% Fielder that we've kind of seen over the last maybe 2 years. It's been, you know, it hasn't quite been the Fielder that we saw when he was in Milwaukee, but plenty good enough to be top five on this list if he can move past the injury darkness. I want to ask a slightly different question about the next guys on this list, though. David Ortiz and Victor Martinez are both highly interesting because they're both extremely productive and they're both very old, which makes their values tricky in dynasty leagues, at least tricky as far as coming up with a sort of an average value for them. They can be valued very differently by any number of owners that have them, depending on where they are and what they think of older players and biases they have there within. But I want to go around, assuming we're talking about the player that you guys value the highest, whether it's Ortiz or Martinez, it doesn't really matter. Who is the best prospect that you would give up for the better of these two players this offseason in a dynasty league? Craig?
Oh, God.
Brutal, Brett. Just brutal.
This is so
brutal. Yeah, why?
It's so hard.
So brutal,
Jesus,
dude.
Christ.
But let me throw out some names. I won't make it as open-ended. I'll throw out.
Jesus.
All right. Let me open up a running version of the 101. So let's start with a borderline top 50 guy. Would you trade Aaron Judge for? Well, let's start. Who do you value higher right now, Ortiz or Victor Martinez?
Ortiz.
Okay. Would you trade Aaron Judge for David Ortiz?
God, why would you do that to me, Judge, right off the bat? What are you asking me about Nomar Mazara next, you son of a bitch?
We'll get there.
God damn it. I mean, this is such a bitch move, but... by me. But, like, it depends where I am on the contention cycle.
Assume you're contending. You're not.
Yes.
You're,
yes.
No
I
one.
Trade Aaron Judge
no
for
one
David
is going
Ortiz.
To trade for Ortiz if they're rebuilding. But, so
no. But I'm saying even if I'm a middling team, I might not do that. If I'm contending, yes.
Yes. If you expect to contend.
If I expect to contend, I will trade Aaron Judge for David Ortiz. Yes.
All right. So let's move up the list. Would you trade Nick Williams for David Ortiz?
Yes.
Would you trade Nomar Mazara for Victor for David?
That is the worst.
You knew I was going to get there.
Yes.
All right. Would you trade David Dahl for David Ortiz?
Oh, God damn it. No, probably not.
Okay. So we're talking about someone sort of in the periphery of the top 25 is sort of the highest you would.
I mean, you were maybe this was just by chance, but you were picking outfield prospects in that sense. I mean, who's like in the third, where was Mazara?
Mazara on the list is early 30s.
Oh, wow. Okay. You've been listening to me too much, maybe.
Maybe.
okay, yeah, I'd say in the around 30s. I mean, Mazara.
Right, so let's go pitcher just to make sure that we're in the right range. Would you trade Daniel Norris for David Ortiz?
I mean, it's right. That's right. That's right there.
That feels right. Like the right spot, right? That feels
me,
just
yeah.
Uncomfortable enough to make you.
Yeah. That's about it.
Out of context, this has really gotten heavy.
Yeah. All right. So I think we found that point. So Mal.
For me, anyway. I also kind of believe David Ortiz is a superhuman and will just be great as long as he decides to play.
I completely agree. So Mal, same question to you. But first, do you prefer Ortiz or Martinez?
I prefer David Américo Arias Ortiz.
Okay. So well, I guess we'll start at the ending point. Would you trade Daniel Norris for David Ortiz?
Yeah, I would.
Okay. Would you trade Robert Stevenson for David Ortiz?
Yeah, I probably would, yeah.
Would you trade Carlos Rodon
for
David Ortiz?
No, that's it. That's the line.
I hate this game.
Yeah, you're an asshole. You are.
I love this game. This is so much fun.
Let's skip me. I don't want to do it.
Now you got to play. You got to play,
Ben.
Man.
Let's go.
God damn it.
Are you Ortiz over Martinez as well?
Yeah, David Ortiz. That's me, the redneck white guy who can't say fancy Spanish names. Give me Ortiz.
All right. Would you trade Dalton Pompey for David Ortiz?
Yes. I think yes.
Okay. would you trade Jameson Taillon for David Ortiz?
Before I would trade Pompey, I would trade Taillon.
Fair enough. Would you trade Francisco Lindor for David Ortiz?
No, I wouldn't.
Okay.
I don't even know about Pompey because he's here too. Like it's much easier for me to trade high upside guys who are far away. Like Mazzara, awful. Judge, not really tough choices for me, even though I like them, but they're just not. I guess Judge is, I don't know. I guess they're fairly close. But Pompey's here now, which is why that was such a tough choice.
All right. Would you trade Jonathan Gray for him?
Oh, fuck off, Brett.
All right. I think we've gotten to the point, so we'll move on.
Can we never play this game again?
All right, I'm just going to throw this out to everybody. Number 13, Eric Hosmer. Yes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't quit it.
I want to quit it, though. Like, I feel like I need to go into a program.
I do, too. If they made little Eric Hosmer patches, I'd be throwing four of them on my arm right now. But exactly. I don't have that type of willpower.
I don't have a good justification for, like, liking him there. I just like him there.
Alpha male, definitely. Yeah. Got some... We can throw back to it. The BP of a year ago. Boys got some rigs.
Yeah.
Truth.
I'm buying on his second half, and I can't help it. I know I shouldn't, but I can't help it. And I also, like, he's got considerably, to me, he still has higher upside than anyone else in that tier. He's 25. I don't know. I can't help it.
Yeah, I completely agree that he has more upside than anyone in that tier.
It's another good, when Jordan asked, you know, who are you wrong about and what have you learned?
Yep.
I was
wrong
with Hosmer and I've learned nothing. And you can't
make zero. Dude, the thing is that I was like, I was ready to quit on him with a bad year or like the year that he had in the first half. But from July on,
it was
last
pretty
year,
good.
He was 321, 379, 509.
Yeah.
That's
and
fantastic.
And he broke his hand in the middle of it.
Just like real quick, real cash, and he was fine.
Yeah.
Right. And so, like, I mean, it's hard for me, for someone with his pedigree and for someone that we bought in on, like, to see him do that again. Like, I understand it was 2 months of games, and that's not a huge sample, but still.
I will.
That's so good.
The thing is, I will hate myself more if I give up on him too soon than if I can't for too long.
Agreed.
If I do a Devin Mesoraco thing where I give up on him the year before he blows up, I won't be able to handle it. So I'm sticking with him.
I've learned absolutely nothing.
I have the man's jersey. That means something to me.
Yeah, we're all just hoping that he takes the Alex Gordon path of development and just finds it late.
That's sixth forever?
Yeah.
Pretty much. All right, so let's stop. Going sort of name by name, but between the tiers, between sort of the the Matt Adams to Chris Carter group, next, you know, eight or so names. Who is the guy here that you would be buying stock in, Ben?
In this tier,
this or is nobody? A, this is it? Is
strange,
it nobody?
No. So this is a strange answer in dynasty leagues, but I think you're going to get a shit ton of value out of Adam LaRoche the next 2 years.
God damn it.
I understand everyone wants to think like 5 years in the future in a dynasty league, but if you're close to competing, I think you're going to be able to get LaRoche for a, what, 75 to 100 range prospect, and he's going to produce for you really well. I mean, he just always sticks out as one of the most underrated fantasy players to me, and now he's in a great ballpark. So I think I would have Lind. I'm sorry, Lind. Ugh, not Lind. Definitely not Lind.
No,
don't do that. Don't do what I said. LaRoche is someone who I would target because I think you'll be able to get him fairly cheaply.
I feel like LaRoche gets underrated a lot by head-to-head players as well, because he has these chasms that kill you. I mean, the end of the line looks really good, but it's, you know, he's a Peak and Valley player. Yeah, it works a lot better than Roto.
Yeah, he's a perfect Roto guy. He's the guy that you plug in and you forget about it, and he shows up with the stats at the end of the season. Yeah.
Yep.
The Mark Burley of first baseman.
But good.
Well, Mark Burley was okay. He was pretty good.
For fantasy purposes.
Oh, well, yeah.
He was the pre-2013.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure.
Pre-2013 Edwin Jackson.
Oh, God.
All right. Well,
I thought we took you to the meeting, Brett.
Come on.
I'm going to call Montero. I'm going to call your sponsor.
Yeah, make it 45 minutes, Brett? Brett, you have people who care about you. This isn't a joke. I thought we were through this.
Yeah, I know.
He can quit anytime he wants.
Yeah, just like us and Hosmer.
Yeah. Except I have the patches.
Oof. I don't know what that means anymore.
Yeah, I don't get TMI. Yeah. I don't really know where that
is. All right, so Craig. Same question.
I'm going to take Kenny Svargas, who's a tier below, because I'm obsessed with him.
And that's because you can't fucking listen to the rules.
Well, listen. I don't know. In that tier, it's not, I don't know, what Brandon Belt? I mean, no one's going to learn any. Everyone kind of likes Brandon Belt. I mean, no one's really out on him. I had someone in a comment.
I don't really like Brandon Belt that much anymore. I don't know.
You don't count.
Fair. What do I say to that? All right, sold.
I had someone in a comment being like, he was on pace for 30 home runs. Like, that meant something. I don't know. It doesn't mean anything. He's not a 30 home run hitter. I mean, I don't know. I'm not in on Lucas Duda. I can tell you that. I'm the guy who doesn't like Lucas Duda.
I don't disagree with you, Craig, but it is funny to hear you make the inverse argument for Brandon Belt that you made for Eric Hosmer.
Like, no, I like Brandon Belt.
Oh, okay. All right.
I like him. I was saying it's not useful to say because I feel like he's still a trendy kind of down, you know, mid-tier first base pick, was my thought. Is that like a lot of people kind of like him?
Oh, okay. My bad.
And I agree with them, but I just don't think it's super helpful to say.
I'm the one who's a hypocrite now, but I don't give a fuck.
I also think this is a super aggressive ranking of Justin Morneau.
I don't think so.
I don't really agree with that. I mean, it's...
Really? He's got one more year in Coors, and he might not even last the whole year there, and he's a different player everywhere else.
He might have two more years in Coors.
In what respect?
There's an option for 2016. It's a mutual option, but they've both expressed interest in making it work.
Well, they also expressed interest in bringing Michael Kadire back. So
this is true. The Rockies express interest in a lot of things.
Especially the big G. I really love the big G.
I was just going to say... I don't think it's crazy aggressive on Morneau. I think that's a strange characterization. I mean, if you want him a little lower, okay, but how much are you really going to dock him? Four slots? Well, not including Kenny Svargas, who is apparently fucking Albert Pujols, and we're just all plebeians who don't
understand. I'd have him ahead of Adam Wind, I guess, but I also think Adam Wind is aggressively ranked.
What? Who? Okay.
Right. Craig doesn't believe in batting average.
Everyone in the bottom half of the list is aggressively
ranked. That's not true. I think Dominic Smith is aggressively ranked.
That's true. Of course you do. That's an accurate thing. Well, he's right.
All right, Mal. What about you? You didn't answer the question.
I mean, can I just one thing real quick? Like you say that batting, like I don't care about batting average. I just want to point out that he hit .319 last year. Every year before that, dating back to 2010, he had been below .270. So it's not like he's, I mean, a batting average monster necessarily.
I think you're a batting average monster.
Well, wait, Mal, please go ahead.
Wow. No, I'm on the Adam LaRoche train. I mean, I want to hear more about the batting average monster.
Is it like the smoke monster, or is there more of a plot with this one?
Do I see Jesus in it?
That got weird.
At 48, weird. At 48 you do, yeah.
All right, so let's break from the... Let's break from the moving downwards version of going through this. What else interests you guys on this list? What players do you enjoy? What rankings do you want to hammer me about? What's going on?
Yonder Alonso at 36 still seems high to me.
I still think there's something there.
Like something like a pulse?
Yeah.
I agree. He is probably alive.
Is it like a tumor or something?
I don't know. I don't think it's a tumor. I certainly hope it's not a tumor.
Does he have a fatty tentacled mass like Carlos Gonzalez?
No. I'm gonna bring up the stat and you're gonna hang with me for a second, but There is something here.
We're waiting.
Yes. Yonder Alonso, for the entire season, if you take out his April, which completely blew, hit .281, .332, .491 with 7 home runs in 187 at bats.
So he was useless in 16 team or shallower leagues.
No.
Well, he never played.
He didn't play.
You just said took out April, and then, like, that means you just spread out 180 at bats over 5 months.
Well, he was hurt a lot of the time.
Yeah. Well, oh, does he not have some like stiff competition in general? Like, he's got. They have like 3 outfielders, none of whom can actually play. I mean, they might play Carlos Quentin at first base for all we know.
Oh my God.
They might. They also might trade Yonder Alonso. He is clearly.
Seems like a Mariners acquisition, if I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, they'll put him in left field.
Quite possibly.
All right, I guess criticizing a major leaguer for being at 36 is harsh. I just don't like Yonder Alonso.
I mean, he's behind CJ Cron. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah.
And behind that, yeah, that's there's it's
fine. Yeah, it's not great.
He's 5 spots behind James Loney. We're not exactly talking about uncharted territory here.
But here's my question. Would you trade AJ Reed for Yonder Alonso?
Would I trade AJ Reed for Yonder Alonso? Yes.
Yeah. So you would rather have Reed?
I would.
Or you would rather?
No, I would rather have. I would want to wait and see how the job situation shook out, because that might move him below AJ Reed if he's really stuck without playing time. But in a vacuum, yes, I would rather have Alonso. Reed has a lot of potential, but Reed's the shiny new toy, and Alonso was the shiny new toy at some point, and he still has some talent in him.
I'd rather have Kendrys Morales, is what I'll say. That's about as low as I would go on this list. I mean, it's, again, it's three spots. It's not a big deal, but that's as far as I would go in terms of moving Alonso down, I guess.
By the way, this was brought up by Ben in the chat, but what are you doing in 48 and 49? What are you trying to do there?
I'm not trying to make commentary on anything.
Bold, Sayer. Bold.
I put a heart after both of them.
But did you put a cross?
Oh, it's not Brett's responsibility to bear. Nailed it.
Oh, that's so bad.
I can say it.
That's true.
Yeah. It's not the Old Bay portion of the podcast. I'm finally allowed.
Yeah, you guys have been through some shit.
It's not been a great run.
Yeah. All right. So what else? What else do we want to talk about on this list?
Anything else? Any other topic would be wonderful.
Should we move on? Are there players that anyone wants to cover?
I'm interested a little bit in Alan Craig because I don't really think he's very good. And where you have him ranked is fine because he's not very far removed from being a useful fantasy asset, and there's a pretty high probability he gets dealt to someone who would want to play him fairly regularly. So this isn't really a critique of the ranking. I'm just wondering what your thoughts are in general on Alan Craig moving forward.
He is an outfielder, I'll add.
Thank you, Craig.
By rank. Well, I'm just saying. 70 games there.
He needs a change of scenery, but there's too much talent in the recent past to put him any lower than that, even though he's, 2015 may be another kind of lost season for him unless something happens soon. But I still think he can hit. I hope that he can move past the injury issues that have plagued him recently, but having him, I think the spot makes sense. I mean, there's really no comfortable place to rank Alan Craig.
Yeah, no, it wasn't a critique of the ranking. I was just curious.
Yeah, no, I just mean from my thought process. I mean, I could make the argument to have him, a good bit higher. I could make the argument to have him a good bit lower. He's one of those guys that just kind of settles, I guess.
Fair enough. Anyone else want to chip in with a name, or shall I move us on to current events?
I don't know. You have. There aren't that many prospects on this list. Obviously, first base prospects are ugly. Ben knows all about that. Aside from the Dominic Smith love at 29, I mean, how big is the gap, I guess, between him and the next prospects on the list? You kind of have AJ Reed, Bobby Bradley, and Garrett, and Greg Bird within a few spots of each other. I guess I'm surprised Greg Bird is that low compared to guys who are just entering Pro Bowl. But I guess how far are those guys from leapfrogging Smith in your mind?
They're actually pretty close. That it's a huge glut of minor league and major league first basemen at that point. I think you could kind of put, I mean, you could put almost anyone in that 15 person group up at 28, and I wouldn't really care. It's very, very close. I mean, just for the gap between Dominic Smith and Matt Olson, both of them are within 10 spots of each other on the 101. They're both right at the end of the 101, but they're both relatively close to each other. It just happens that there's a whole bunch of major leaguers smushed in between them.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that makes sense to me. I just think it's because it is 29 to 41 is a fairly big gap. Although not as much this far down the list, but just so people are aware.
It's definitely not nearly as sizable of a gap as it seems. There is a cliff at some point, and it's probably right after Bird. The drop from Bird to Davis is pretty
Ben, what are you doing?
Substantial.
Yeah, Ben.
What am I doing?
Yeah, your mic is rubbing against your collar. It sounds like your shirt is on fire.
It's an epidemic. I actually don't know what I did.
Only you can prevent shirt fires.
I was going to try to make an El Oso smoky joke here, but it's just not coming together.
That was good enough.
Thank you for the pity laughs.
It was a strong thought.
Thanks, Brett. So good for professional development. That should be a comment on most of my articles. This was a strong thought at one point. Didn't really come together, but A for thought effort. All right, are we good? Can I move us on to current events, or are we going to keep talking about who's in the bottom of this list? Anyone want to debate Stephen Vogt versus Logan Morrison?
It's totally Vogt.
All right, well, there's a vote of confidence. Anyone else?
Boo!
Terrible. You're in an unfortunate role right now, Ben.
This is what I live for. Quit your mitching. All right. Let's move on to current events. We can start with the Ben Zobrist trade. Zobrist was traded to the A's for a bunch of stuff that went back to the Rays. So while I look up the rest of this trade, let's talk about the Zobrist impact first. Mal, we'll start with you. Do you view Zobrist any differently now that he is an Athletic?
No. I mean, it's kind of the same park factors, I think. It's the same hitting environment. He's just a little bit older. I don't really view him any differently. I don't really think the Rays offense was known for all its punch. It's just, it's fine. I think he's a player who can survive the change of context. Greg?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fine. It's tempting to say that. I mean, I guess it's hard to go to a much worse offense than the Rays have had in recent years, but at the same time, Oakland's offense isn't at all what it was last year, given who they've kind of shipped out and shipped in. So I don't know. I don't think their offense is nearly as good as it was last year, so it's not like you can plug and play in that respect, but I guess it's a small bump contextually from Tampa Bay, but pretty much the same.
All right, let's move on to some of the players who returned to the Rays in this deal. John Jaso sounds like he's going to be playing a little bit of outfield, a little bit of first base, a little bit of catcher, DHing quite a bit. Any change for him, or does everything we said about the park factors for Zobrist being fairly similar remain true for Jaso, Brett?
Yeah, I think he remains almost exactly the same in overall value, and in pretty much every way. I mean, there could you possibly get two teams that use players in a more similar fashion than the Rays and the A's? I mean,
they even sound
right down to the R and the Y. No, you can't.
No, that's true. I'm just really excited. It's Nick Franklin time.
I like Franklin too. I know Craig does not think he's as good.
Craig's
going to
enjoy this conversation. But Craig,
no,
Craig,
I haven't enjoyed any of this.
Craig hates Nick Franklin.
I basically do hate Nick Franklin at this point.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyone need to say anything about Boog Powell or Daniel Robertson? I mean, I'm assuming they're far enough away that we can just move on.
I feel like you're slighting Josh Fegley right now.
Maybe I wasn't done with this trade, and I was going to go back to Josh Fegley.
You just said moving on.
Yeah, to the other part of the trade.
Oh, okay. Go, then proceed.
All right. Evan Gattis traded from the Braves to the Astros today. Obviously a good thing. Craig, are you comfortable? Well, no, that's the bad question because he still has catcher eligibility. Do you think Gattis will be a top 8 fantasy catcher this year?
I'm going to say yes.
Brett.
With room to spare.
No.
He's going to be a top five.
Ooh. You dog. Will Gattis, let's assume for a moment, and this is not 100%, but let's assume Gattis loses catcher eligibility. Will you be comfortable with Gattis as an outfield three in 2015, Mao?
Yeah, I'd be okay with that.
Brett?
I expect that answer to be yes.
Well, you're giving it.
Yeah.
All right, Craig.
I'm going to say no. I'd be more comfortable because I think he's going to miss games. And at catcher, that's less of a big deal. At outfield, you know, if I'm relying on him to be in the outfield, I want someone who's going to play more than maybe 110 games or so. But I think the production while he plays is fine.
All right, that's fair. Anyone have any thoughts on Folti going from the AL to the NL? I think it's better for him because it's easier to pitch in the NL. He is going to a more favorable park. I think he might have a longer leash to start now. Anyone want to refute me? Anyone still so convinced he's a reliever that this doesn't even matter?
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
I'm totally whatever about this whole situation.
I think he's a reliever long term, but I do think that putting him with Roger McDowell is a big deal, and that's yep. less a commentary on Houston's pitching development, but Roger McDowell has done a really good job mechanically with a few guys, and I think one of the biggest things with Folti is that he changes arm slots a lot in terms of when he's throwing his curveball and when he's throwing his fastball, and so people identify it and pick it up really easily. And I think McDowell is one of several pitching coaches who could give him a better chance to start. I think of the places for him to land, this is a better one.
I think
in the end he's a reliever anyway.
Yeah, I'm not going to I'm going to say this. I think it's either in vogue or going to be in vogue that teams are going to start targeting, you know, relievers or guys who are currently relieving that they think can start. And you know, when you think about what, you know, McDowell has done, and Craig illustrated this pretty well, if you give Folti another pitch, or if you just kind of teach him like a little bullshit cutter or so, another third offering and tighten up his command, it's a lot to ask. But I think the Braves made this deal with the expectation that they can convert Foltynewicz into a starter. You know, even if it's in like for like 2 or 3 years, like that's pretty positive value. So it's, you know, it's tough to project that out. It's just, you know, when a guy throws 100 and he's got, you know, it's tough to not get excited about him going to someone with the resume that McDowell has. So I mean, go ahead.
Doesn't he need a second pitch first?
I mean, he's got the curveball. It's okay.
So I've as much as we all caution against comps, I've kind of thrown Nate Eovaldi out before as a high octane fastball, can hold it deep into his starts and kind of has a fringe to slightly above average curve. Or breaking ball, rather, depending on the night. Eovaldi's is a slider, but I mean, Folti can drop like a plus curveball once in a while, but he has absolutely zero consistency. So there are going to be nights where he has a curveball that's borderline unusable. There are going to be nights where he looks really good, even as a two pitch guy, kind of like Shelby Miller is, and there are going to be a lot of nights where he flashes some of both in that sense, which might be worth starting while he's cheap and not when he's expensive or something like that. But, you know, I don't know. So to answer your question, Brett, I mean, he occasionally has a second pitch, but sometimes not really.
Cough, Alan Webster, cough.
As Folti's command is, that's insulting.
Yeah, well, I mean,
even to him,
the quality of Folti's pitches is better than the quality of even Webster's best pitches, but the syndrome is the same.
Did you just combine Eovaldi and Alan Webster?
Eovaldi. All right. Lastly, I'm going to let Brett take this because, I don't know. Jung Ho Kang, I'm hoping I'm not completely butchering that, has signed with the Pirates. I know he's has put up some very, very flashy numbers in Korea. I have no idea how that translates. Brett, where would you, if Kang had been eligible for your top 50, fuck off, Mal.
That was good.
If Kang had been eligible for your top 50 Dynasty signees list, where would he have ranked? And I know you never get questions like this, so if you need some extra time to think, just let me know.
No, definitely never never get any questions like this. Well, I did get a question like this. I would put him right at the beginning of the 20s, in that list. He put up extremely flashy stats in the KBO, but so did a lot of people. Here's my favorite stat about 2014 KBO. And now they introduced a new ball, which in case you were wondering whether it enhanced offense, Eric Thames. You remember Eric Thames?
Of course.
Or Thames?
I remember Marcus. Oh, yeah, Mark Thames.
Eric Thames.
Not to be confused with Marcus Thames. Yeah.
Seattle and Toronto, among other places.
Eric Thames hit .343 with 37 home runs in the KBO in 2014. Oh, so that's pretty much how that translates. Now, Kang has a better swing, and I think he might be able to hit enough to play every day and be okay. But this is not one of these Cuban players coming over who puts up big stats in Serie Nacional. A totally different scenario. That's not to say that Kang couldn't be very good. I'm not going to be paying for that. So I do love the fact that he has already called out Jordy Mercer, which
that was amazing.
Which now makes me want to root for him so hard. So I will be rooting for him to be good, but I'm not particularly optimistic. I think at best he's probably not that far off from Jordy Mercer. He's probably about a .260 hitter with 15 home runs. That's my best guess. He could probably do a little bit better than that, and if he does a little bit better than that, then maybe he could be he's pretty much a poor man's Johnny Peralta.
Yikes.
So yeah, don't get that excited. But I mean, he's a Korean batter coming over, and we've never seen that before, so you never know. If you put Miguel Cabrera in the KBO, what would he hit?
I still wouldn't take him seventh.
No. You take him behind Eric Thames?
I would absolutely. There are plenty of things I'd take behind Eric Thames.
Wow.
Do you remember Eric Thames' sideburns?
I remember Christian Guzman's sideburns.
Eric Thames had fantastic sideburns.
I actually don't really know where to go from here anymore. Wait, who's the pitcher? Dustin McGowan.
Yes.
Ooh, yes.
He had like Civil War general sideburns.
Mm-hmm. I think more fringy players need to do weird facial hair / hair things so we can remember them.
Enya with a goatee, is that a deal breaker, or can we still talk about it?
It's absolutely
I'm
not
interested.
A deal breaker.
I'm still in.
Not a deal breaker.
I'm out.
All right, Matt, we'll send you picks.
Cool.
Welcome back to episode 38 of Tino. As always, we will end with a little housekeeping. On Wednesday, January 20th, I am holding a BP Fantasy Chat at 7:30 p.m., so get in on that. And on Thursday, January 28th, Matt was holding a BP chat, so when you're done asking me questions, ask me another question and ignore his chat. Please rate and review us on iTunes. Every rating and every review helps us tremendously, and we love reading your comments too. You can find us on Twitter at Tino Podcast and get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com. You can find Brett at Dynasty Guru. You can find Mauricio at MRubio52. You can find Craig at CD. That's CD as in condominium. I forgot to make a CD and couldn't think of a word that that begins with D that I could use to describe someone who shares his home with me, but I'll be visiting him soon, Goldstein. And you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thank you for listening and have a good night.
It was a really long CD.
I know.
So we both struggled so hard with it.
I was really trying for like the entire program. Are we lumping Enya and Dido together? Because
that was really good. Brett, that was like three in a row.
Brett, you're killing it. Do you write these down, man?
No.
Yeah, he had a fucking Dido library ready for in case this reference came.
It wouldn't surprise me. Have you seen the guy make lists? Fucking does. It's not surprising.
It's such a fair counterpoint. That's so good.
Yeah, I have nothing to say.
Oh my god, Mal.
That was awesome. Oh, that was fantastic.
Oh, that could be the intro.
Yeah, absolutely. Or the outro, I guess. That was really good.
Oh man.
I might have to leave. I'll just let you guys record.
Mm. Yeah, seriously.
So don't even tell me it's fucking Quetzalcoatl. Don't go Quaddle on me.
It's Quetzal.
Oh, okay, better. Fine. I can accept that.
Quetzalcoatl.
If you came in with Quaddle, we were going to have an issue.
Well, you guys aren't going to know this because you don't have children, but there is an episode of my daughter's favorite show where they come across some sort of dragon, and his name is Pretzalcoatl, and he just is searching for pretzels.
Oh, shit. That's actually clever.
Is your daughter high?
No, but the people writing the show might be.
It's not Dora the Explorer,
is it? Kids shows are perfect for people who are high.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, kids are basically just very high, small adults, so.
That's might Pretty be much. The podcast title, actually.
That's,
kids are
yep.
just very high, small adults.
Kids are just adult prospects.
That's so meta.
Okay, I'm actually not high, so we should just keep moving on.